I wonder how it's been for you. I wonder how you're coping through this third national lockdown. I wonder how you're coping with the pressures of homeschooling. If you're at work, I wonder how you're coping with all the constraints that come with either working at home or having to go into work and work in different ways with safety, new safety equipment, new ways of doing things. And if you're out of work, I wonder how you're coping with the anxiety of trying to pay the bills, trying to find a new job, all in the constraints of a lockdown. I wonder if there are times when you just would like a little space, a little bit of time with a wider family, a hug from a friend, just a little something to boost your energy, just something to restore your spirit, something to give you the energy just to push on again, the courage to cope and the courage to continue coping with the current constraints upon us. Now, the danger of the passage we've read from Isaiah 40, and indeed the passage we read from Mark's Gospel, is that we go straight to the end and focus on the end verses. Such is our desire for just a little bit of hope, our craving for something that will give us a sense of renewal, fresh courage, a bit of restoration. We hone in on those last words. Even young people grow tired and weary. Young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not grow faint. Oh, how we yearn that that might be the case. And so we focus on those words. We focus on the fact that early in the morning, Jesus goes away to a quiet place. And we speak about the importance of a quiet time, the time set aside to read the Bible and to pray, creating a bit of space where we can be quiet and seek God. But I wonder if in doing this, in rushing to the end of the passage, we're missing something. Wonder if we're missing something that would give us that extra lift in homing on the promise that those who would hope in and renew the Lord and renew their strength. Some versions say those who wait on the Lord will renew their strength. I wonder, in concentrating on the fact that following a busy day, Jesus slips away to a quiet place to pray, I wonder whether we're missing something about the nature of God. And in missing something about the nature of God, we miss something that might anchor us, might root us, might center us, might make those moments of quiet reflection, that those moments snatched in a busy day to spend time with God in prayer, might make those times even more intense, even more significant. Because when we look at Isaiah 40, we find it in the context prior to Isaiah 40, we find Hezekiah approached by the prophet. And we find one of those rare kings who actually tries to do good. He actually tries to live in such a way as to honor God. But he becomes ill and he has a miraculous recovery. And then in a moment of stupidity in Isaiah 39, we find him showing the Babylonians all the riches of his storerooms. And inevitably, Babylon invades and takes all those wonderful gifts, all those riches from them. And so Isaiah 40 opens with the Lord's words, "Comfort, comfort my people. They've suffered long enough." And that leads them into make a straight passage, the passage we know from the words of John the Baptist, calling out in the wilderness. And it's only then we get to the lead-in, to the strength that the Lord gives. The passage that begins, "Do you not know? Have you not heard?" Perhaps a more accurate translation of this, scholars believe, is, "Will you not hear? Will you not know? Will you not know? Will you not hear that? Has it not been told to you from the beginning? Have you not understood since birth? He sits on a throne encircling the earth. The people are like grasshoppers to him. He stretches out his hands like a canopy and spreads them out like a tent to live in." Before we get to the part where the Lord promises restoration and renewal, where he says if we wait on him, there are the actions of the proud king. There is penance. There is forgiveness. There is the call to make way for the Lord. And then from verse 21 onwards, there is the reminder of the power and the majesty and the glory of God. Isaiah's call to Israel is to hear and not just listen as in a conversation, but to hear and acknowledge accordingly. To know that knowledge is the basis for action. And it is to know who God is. To grasp the enormity of who he is. "Do you not know?" the prophet says. "Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood since the earth was founded? He sits enthroned above the circle of the earth. And its people are like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy and he spreads them out like a tent to live in." The picture Isaiah paints is one of a majestic God. He reminds that God is beyond the natural world. He is other. He is beyond our ability to fully comprehend. Before we get to the good news of the strength and for the weary, there is a reminder of who God is, his power and his majesty. Mark's gospel is very similar. By the time we get to the bit that Jesus goes away to a quiet place early in the morning to pray, the work of the kingdom of God is in full spring. True to his style, Mark creates an environment of breakneck speed. The disciples have been called. The principles of the kingdom are taught in the synagogues. The spiritual realm is engaged with. Demons are cast out. The sick are healed. There's an energy, an excitement in abundance in Mark's glory. And in many ways, that excitement is addictive. And we see that as early in the morning, the disciples are concerned. Where is Jesus? And when they find him, they exclaim, "Everyone's looking for you." I wonder whether there's something in this for us, whether there is an adrenaline addiction, a restlessness, so desire to be active and to be doing, a desire to be involved in the next thing that we perceive God is moving us into, that we lose sight of who God is. And I wonder if the antidote to drivenness is a recognition of who God is, acknowledging his power and his majesty, recognizing his call upon us to wait on him, to rest in him, to center ourselves by acknowledging who he is. There's something here about centering, not being caught up in the moment, being aware of where the focus is. In Isaiah, there is an excitement of the rescue from death. Hezekiah acts in stupidity, and the whole of Israel pays the price. And having announced the forgiveness of sin, having exalted them to listen, we find a reminder of who God is, a reminder of his otherness, his majesty, his power. In the opening of Mark's gospel, Mark, Jesus is busy stirring up society, exercising authority. The signs and wonders are there, and yet he makes time to center, communing with his Father in prayer. Both of these point to centering. Jesus slipping away in the morning. Isaiah's word, but those who hope and wait on the Lord will renew their strength. Both of these passages, there is a turning away from the moment to recognize God. For Isaiah, it is the one enthroned above the heavens and the earth who spreads out the heavens in verse 22. It is the one who thwarts the plans of the earthly rulers in verse 23. It is the one who has no equal in verse 25. It is the one who knows each star and counts them to make sure that they're in their right place, verse 26. It is the one who has a wisdom beyond which we can fathom, verse 28. In Mark's gospel, it is much more simple. He simply says very early in the morning, while it is still dark, Jesus got up and left the house and went to a solitary place and prayed. Jesus simply finds time to engage in a conversation with his Father, despite the wonders and the signs, despite all the good he has been doing. Jesus makes time to center himself. And he does that by acknowledging his Father in heaven. If these passages have anything to say to us about renewal and restoration, they offer a warning about being caught up in the moment and invite us to focus. I've already noted that the renewal in this passage comes after the exaltation of who God is. But notice in Mark's passage, there's something else as well. Because having spent time in prayer, having been communing with his Father, Jesus' reply is striking. The disciples come and say to him, "Everybody is looking for you." And Jesus' reply is, "Let's go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. That is why I have come." I wonder if we get so caught up in the moment, so involved in the busyness of the situation, and don't allow time to center, don't allow time to pause and reflect on who God is, we miss something. We miss that turn in the road, miss that change of direction, miss the place that God is calling us to, or miss simply the opportunity to put where we are in focus, in a new perspective. Or maybe we simply miss the opportunity to create space to allow us the questions, what is it I need to do in this situation? What is it that I need from the Lord in this situation? How do I respond to what is happening to me, to what is happening around me? Interestingly, in both cases, the renewal and restoration the Lord offers does not come from the reflecting on the past. It does not come from focusing on our stupidity of action or even the forgiveness that God has given us. It does not come from the amazing things that are happening today, yesterday, last week, last month. In both cases, the renewal, the energy comes from who God is. In the Isaiah passage, it's clearly evident, as the seven verses, arguably 25, lead us up to focus on God here before speaking of restoration, the renewal that the Lord brings. Whereas for Mark, it's a busy day and a simple statement. Very early in the morning, Jesus slips away to pray. The great American evangelist, D.L. Moody, who was well known for having a real infilling of the Spirit, was once asked why he spent a great time in prayer, asking for God to fill him again with his Spirit. And Moody simply said, "I leak." I wonder if we not so much leak, but lose sight, lose perspective. Do not spend time to acknowledge just who God is. I wonder how much we would gain if not we didn't simply make space to pray, not simply making space to wait on the Lord, but making space to acknowledge who God is. And not just God as friend and comforter and guide, but the majestic, powerful one, the one whose nature is beyond what we can comprehend, the one who would fill our minds to overflowing and beyond. I wonder if we were to reclaim a moment from the day to set aside the anxiety, the busyness, the desire to be active, to find a moment to reflect on the enormity of who God is. I wonder how that would help. I wonder how it would help us gain a perspective on what we are facing. How it would help us see the Lord provide for us even in small things. I wonder how it would help us appreciate the skills and the things we have to offer to others and give thanks to God for them. I wonder if we were to take a moment to reflect on the enormity of who God is, we might just discover a new depth of his love for us, a new revelation of what he's done for us in Jesus, how much he has offered us in the way of a deepening relationship with him. Yes, it is true that these two passages offer restoration and renewal. Yes, it is true these passages call us to make space, space to pray, space and time to wait on the Lord. But I wonder if they offer something else. A reminder that genuine renewal, genuine restoration comes from acknowledging who God is in all his majesty and power. And I wonder what would change if, as individuals and as a church, in our relationship with wider society, I wonder how we would change if we put ourselves in perspective by centering in on who God is. I wonder. Amen.